have on the line from the Green Party, Donna Cooney. Good afternoon, Donna, and welcome to Northside Today.
Good afternoon.
I'm doing my best to promote the summer theme here this morning, or this afternoon as it is now.
We're finally getting it. And as I said, that makes you more think of how sad it is than, you know, the prospect of losing our fields, and that, you know, you're coming up to summer and the children should be out there playing in their on their fields.
The segue I was going to use myself. Donna, you're on and you're here with us this morning. You're going to talk about residential project on some of the pitches down in St. Anne's Park.
Yes. Well, it's actually 9 pitches that are going to be lost, and also very significant in area terms, and was found so and recommended not to go ahead because of the significance to do with the Brent geese there, that it's one of the most significant feeding grounds for them. And obviously they coexist very happily, the children playing there on the field, because it's mostly junior teams. That not only do they have their games there, they're training there, the summer camps there, everything from the GA club, football club, the rugby club, they all use those fields. So it's across the different, you know, boys and girls, you know, so of different ages. And so, I mean, they've been coexisting there for decades and decades, and this development, for all the talk of housing crisis, this type of development, I think, is not going to solve any sort of housing crisis. And it's a sort of, you know, to allow this type of thing on a Z15 zoning, high density is good. You know, it's good to be using high density so that we can protect the fields that we have and the green spaces we have. But even more urgent, the more high density housing we have, the more that there is need to retain our facilities and our amenities.
Donna, maybe before we go any further into this, you might explain exactly what Z15 zoning means.
Well, it's a zoning that was brought in for institutional lands, and the residential element of it was to relate specifically to something. It was like if it was a hospital or a school, you know, you might want to put an extension on the school, put in a school hall, you know, there might be a caretaker residence in it. If it was in a hospital, there may be residencies for the nurses. So it was that type of, you know, or there might be student accommodation. So it was that type of thing. And but it was supposed to maintain an open aspect to it, you know, and also to maintain the amenity value of what was existing. Also, I mean, it's in so many other levels as well. I mean, even if this had, which it doesn't have, residential zoning, it doesn't have the mix that would be normally given permission under the development plan, because when there was discussions previously about having high density and having higher rise, I mean, you take, these are actually 8-storey in a place that normally is just, you know, that only has 2-storey houses, you know, so these are 8-storey high. When we were talking about higher density and higher rise housing residential development previously down in the Docklands, it was very it was made very important that they have a mix of 3-bedroom, 2-bedroom and a smaller percentage of 1-bedroom, because, you know, if you actually want people to live there and it to be sustainable and families to live there, you need that mix. You know, otherwise you're just going to end up with a sort of a transient community. I suspect these will be sold because the developer who's actually involved in this has previous record for having been, you know, sold even after, but have, before they've even been built, sell them off to foreign investors, you know, because...
Donna, can I put it to you before, you know, before we go any further into this, and I'm not saying that this is me putting forward the argument, but I'm saying that it is an argument that's going to be put forward, is that with the state of play at the moment, if you'll pardon the pun, there are 10,000 people, roughly, give or take, homeless. 3,500 of them are children. That it is far more important to put a permanent, stable, safe roof over their head, over those 3,500 children, than to provide playing pitches for other children. That's going to be one argument. And the other one is that that you could... And I have seen you, and I've seen Eoin O'Riordan as well, whom I was speaking to earlier on a different matter, speaking in relation to this, that there is a possibility that it could be suggested that you are going down the road of, well, people need to be housed, but they just don't house them here. House them somewhere else. How do you react to those two arguments?
It's a case that, I mean, this will set a precedent for building on these type of lands. And they're not building social housing. This is a private development to benefit a private developer. They're not low cost. They're not affordable. They will not house. And in fact, you'll probably get out of any sort of condition to put in 10%, because that's happened even with over in the Glass Bottle Bank there on the south side. You know, they're reneging on their
commitment. Yeah, I'm aware of that. And there's a lot of political upheaval in relation to that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the one that's been out of the marches. I was actually I'm very involved with the homeless issue. And if I thought, houses were going to be for homeless, for people that are there in need of homes or in danger of homeless. I mean, a lot of the crisis that's been caused by homeless is being caused by this type of development, which doesn't look at the actual social need for people to live in sustainable communities where they actually have a secure roof over their head. You know, if the housing, we cannot solve housing and have it developer-led. It has to be something that's done for a social need, which is done in any country like Austria, have no homeless people. Finland have no homeless people. It's because simply people are housed depending on their needs, and they pay depending on their means. And you don't know what your neighbour's paying, and it means that if you lost your job, you had an accident, you had tragedy in your family, you had to become a carer or whatever, you would never lose the roof over your head, and there's a lot of people that are losing their homes every week because their mortgages are in arrear, because the owner of the property that invested in that, maybe a second house for their retirement or whatever, it's gone into arrears, and they can't, the houses are being taken back by the banks.
The other side of that one, Donna, where they bought the house during the recession, and now they see that it has accumulated, maybe in some cases,
in
double
value.
And they're
and
cashing
in. Security of tenure. We're not talking about security of tenure. This is going to be a very transient community. And the people living in those houses will not have any more protection than in any other resident. In fact, the costs are actually going to be so significantly high that even if they were to get a percentage of them for social housing, the maintenance costs, because they're in apartment-style maintenance, it'd be a private maintenance company, are going to be huge.
The property tax or anything like that. Donna, for somebody who is absolutely, without a brain in his head and doesn't understand anything, can you explain to me where this process is? Is it being muted that this is going to happen? Has there been planning permission sought? Has there been planning permission? Where are we in the actual process?
It's been granted, and it was fast-tracked in this new, this is the first time, so this is sort of like a test case. So I think, that's the problem. I mean, this has national significance, let alone, local. This is not NIMBYism, because this has national significance, and everybody should be, it's not just an issue for us in Dublin, in Dublin Bay North. It's an issue nationally, because this is the first time that they have fast-tracked and put, a strategic development that it goes straight to on board Pinola. And, people that are not accountable really to anybody have made decisions. We don't know what their expertise are in whatever areas they've decided. There was an inspection. The inspector went down at 1 o'clock on a Sunday and said there wasn't many people playing on the pitch as well. Everybody knows you won't be playing at 1 o'clock on a Sunday, at lunchtime.
Why I wonder did he not go down at 3 o'clock on a Saturday?
I know. Why indeed not? Or 11 o'clock on a Saturday.
So, Donna, before you go,
the inspection of the Brent geese and the fact that they said that they could, somehow accommodate the geese somewhere else. I mean, that is ridiculous, because, if you see the submission by Birdwatch, Ireland, you see the submission by Dublin City Council itself. Now, the stage is that there's an emergency motion that's been put down looking for Dublin City Council to take a judicial review. The Residents Association have teamed up with I Love St Anne's, and there was two huge public meetings there last week, one in Clontarf Castle and one in Raheny. And, 600 or 700 at each meeting. And, you know, there's huge level of support for this because people realise once you lose that asset of old playing fields, you're not going to get them back again. And if you sort of use that as a... there's plenty of brownfield sites. There's plenty of industrial zoned lands that can be, you know, rethinked. And Dublin City Council themselves have lands. You know, there's plenty of infill as well. There, we are not actually in shortage of land. And then you look over the Docklands and you look at, you know, the fact that, you know, they're storing containers and things over there when that could easily be housing. There are so many other options. And then, you know, public land is then being sold off to private developers who's, you know, by themselves, they're accountable to their board. They're accountable to, they're just there to make profit. They're not there to fill a social need, you know.
Donna, I, from my limited, and I am going to qualify this question because I think it's a very pertinent to this argument, my limited knowledge of planning and planning applications. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when you make a planning application, one of the cornerstones of any application is that what you intend to build has to be in keeping with the area that it is. Now, I, for the life of me, and we've been talking now for 14 minutes, I'm struggling with the concept and the vision of an 8-storey apartment block surrounded by 3-bedroom semi-detached houses.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the normal planning, and it normally is to be in keeping, and that is, you know, it has to enhance the amenity value in an area. It's normally to say, oh, that doesn't get planning permission because it's not in keeping with the rest of the developments. And, you know, the fact is that you don't even have a process to appeal because it went straight through the strategic planning process. And the only avenue you have is to take a judicial review. I mean, in terms of I've been, you know, giving advice and things like that to the Residents Association because we do have the Our House Convention, which means that at least, you know, if we could pull that into play, that the costs cannot be prohibitive if you're bringing them on environmental grounds. And we have a lot of environmental grounds. We have the Bird Directive. We have the EU Habitat Directive. We also have other protected species like the bats, which are nocturnal, and this is bringing light into an area that, you know, previously enjoyed darkness. So, I mean, there's a whole row of different strands that can be brought together for this. But the process, the time now is ticking, and it's just an awful lot of work. But I think that, you know, we'd like the whole community to come behind this because nobody is against housing per se. We know that we need housing, but we need is the correct type of housing in a location that is not taking away from the amenity value that the whole of Dublin's north side enjoy. You know what I mean? It's not just local people because if they've got a home game, that's where they're going to be. So other teams play there as well. So, I mean, this is... There's other GAA clubs, there's other clubs, there's a club up in Drumcondra. So it's happening everywhere. And, you know, before we know it, we'll just end up with no facilities and no playing fields. And as we see the health havoc that's caused by people having sedate lives, and children start off young and get an enjoyment for sport.
And Donna, has there been any mention of relocating these pitches elsewhere?
Well, there was a phase one planning application for an all-weather pitch, which wasn't given permission because that was obviously going to be seen as a community gain aspect of it. But that was one pitch in replacement for 9, and it was an all-weather pitch as well, which, I mean, was no good for the Brent geese, you know. And doesn't provide, you know, the facilities that they have at present.
And I don't wish to turn this into an episode of The Simpsons, Donna, but how close in the, we'll say, the planning and the, well, of course, as you say, planning has been granted in this case, but how close are we to the machines moving in is the question I really want to ask.
Well, we have to, in a few weeks' time, really, if we don't, if the judicial review, if Dublin City Council don't take a judicial review, there's an emergency meeting on Tuesday, called by all the local councillors, and then it'll go to the legal department to see whether that, because when you think of the planning, this is actually going against the Planning Act, because the Planning Act says that councillors are one of the functions, few functions that is actually local government has managed to retain in terms of democracy, is that they decide on the development plan. So that's one of the few functions left to councillors. And if their function is then, undermined basically because on board Pinalla can decide to basically effectively change the zoning remit and say that, you know, because it's now become privately owned land, it no longer has to follow the same zoning that is in the city development plan. I mean, that has to be held into question and that has to be opposed because, that will mean that they'll be able to, every development over 100 houses can then go through this process.
Donna, when was
the... say that there's a precedent that's been set now, it'll be very difficult for them to if they allow something as, inappropriate as this, and that flouts every sort of, regulation and planning objective. What chance has any other community that has houses being built on their school grounds? What hope do they have, or their GAA club, or wherever?
One quick question, Donna, you may not know this, so it's probably an unfair question to ask you, but when was planning permission applied for in this case?
Well, it was just before Christmas they started the process.
So hold on a minute now, Donna. That's fine. Just before Christmas, which was 4 months ago, and in a couple of weeks we're good to go with machines. So 5 months.
That's true. I mean, previous planning applications had to be taken out because they didn't comply with the normal regulations, and we all put in objections and things like that. So, but this process is a fast track process because it's apparently strategic development. Normally, strategic development previously would have been something as in you needed a bridge or you need the Lewis.
Yeah, it's infrastructure. Infrastructure is really what strategic development covers.
It would normally be, but this was this government brought in this new regulation that facilitates housing developments any over 100. And I mean, who is that to benefit? I mean, how has this got anything to do with, housing first or putting houses? Because more people are becoming homeless all the time. We had the sort of the boom and bust before of the housing bubble, and we need a new different type of housing, mechanism put in place that actually puts roofs over people's heads and puts secure roofs over people's heads, and not this developer-led housing because it hasn't worked in the past. Why keep making the same mistakes?
Well, there is an old saying, isn't it, Donna, that the definition of, is it insanity, is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Donna Cooney.
Oh, I know, God.
Donna Cooney from the Green Party. Donna, do you mind if we keep in touch with you over this matter? And we will talk to you again in the coming weeks in relation to it, because there's a lot of... more questions that I'd like to ask you in relation to this.
There's a lot at stake, and I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank all those that have been working so hard on this. There's people that are putting in all the time on the voluntary basis, the Residents Association, there's Deirdre Becknick, there's Georgina on the, I Love St. Anne, and they've been putting in an enormous amount of work on this, since it was first tutored, and at the moment, and they just say, if it weren't for people like that, where would we be, But they shouldn't have to, but they are doing it, and they're doing it on all of our behalf.
Donna Cooney from the Green Party, thank you so much for joining us on Northside today. And Donna, I've no doubt we'll be talking very soon again about this topic. Thanks, Donna.
Thank you. Lovely to speak to you. Bye.
Bye-bye.